Cork. Here we go again.
It's time to talk.
I thought it was April Fool's Day when I heard that one. Get me off the air before I have a heart attack. We will have nothing to see for it. There's been many false dawns.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
The kindness of Cork people will never let you down.
Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation. Pick up the phone. Text 0868104106. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. Good morning to all. We have some lovely giveaways across the morning. Being Monday, we have the Monday Munchies with Luso of Ballincollig. Some beautiful, beautiful, gorgeous cakes and treats for you every single Monday morning. Today's no exception. Tell you more about that a little later on. And also right across the week, we have some lovely overnights with dinner for two at the Metropole Hotel. So that would be an overnight stay in the Metropole with dinner for two in the Met Bar and restaurant and a gorgeous, delicious breakfast next morning. So all that and lots more besides between now and midday today. Meanwhile, paper-wise, much of it has to do with a fairly decent old simmering row that's going on now between ourselves and the UK over immigration and migration and the movement of people onto the island of Ireland. Now, the update to this is there was supposed to be a meeting between Helen McEntee, the Justice Minister, and the UK Home Secretary, which has now been cancelled in London between the two because we have an escalating row over migrants travelling from the UK to Ireland. If you're following it, you're aware that the vast majority are coming now from the UK through Northern Ireland and across into the Republic because we have an open border now. So as the Mail puts it this morning, the UK won't take back the migrants that are coming here, having left the UK and coming into the Republic over the border. And that means the relations between Ireland and the UK are on a knife edge. I don't know. I mean, what could happen? Like, we're not going to go to war. Like, this is just a big diplomatic row that's going to have to be resolved in some way, shape or form. But anyway, enough of me. The papers are saying Ireland will not be an asylum loophole. They're the words of Simon Harris, who has said that we will not provide a loophole for other countries and their problems. You see, at the weekend, Rishi Sunak was saying that the British policy of sending people who've landed in the UK on boats or ribs or coming across the channel to Rwanda means that they are now going across to Northern Ireland instead of the prospect of going to Rwanda and making their way down into the Republic. And he said that that is proving that the British policy is working, much, of course, to the annoyance of Irish politicians and, I suppose, Irish people, because we have to live with the consequence. So Simon Harris is saying, we're not having this. We're not going to be the loophole. But the problem with this is that the UK have said that they won't. I mean, I was reading also in the English Times this morning, the UK are saying, or at least Sunak is saying, that they won't take back any asylum seekers who have left the UK and went to other European countries, including Ireland, unless there is some sort of a reciprocal deal with the European Union. They're outside of the European Union now, and I suppose they can do their own thing. So it's very interesting as to what will happen next. What certainly seems to have been happening to me in the last couple of months is a complete reversal by all politicians, it would seem, vast majority of them anyway, and all political parties on their stand on our border and border controls. I recall a conversation on air with Micheál Martin over 12 months ago. I don't know how he's feeling now, because it seems that everybody feels that this has just gone absolutely nuts now. And it's just not possible to maintain whatever amount of people who wish to come in here through whatever means they want to come in here. And it's just not attainable in the short or the medium or the foreseeable future. And amongst them is Sinn Féin, because many people have been saying, you've had a complete reversal in your beliefs with regards to our borders. At one stage, Sinn Féin was very much for open borders and people coming in here, and there was room for everybody, which clearly there isn't. And now Mary Lou McDonald has said that she's defending her party's rhetoric on open borders, arguing that it has been her position and the Sinn Féin position for many, many years, that they are not in favour of open borders. She claimed that it has not, that there's been a lot of misinformation around migration, and accused the government of scrambling on the issue. She says, we want a system that is fair and that is efficient. And she says people should maybe look back at the newspapers or read the policies or statements of Sinn Féin down through the years. So we have a lot of confusion and an awful lot of chaos. And while that's happening, of course, we have more protests We have more rallies, we have more assemblies, and we have more threats against politicians. So the latest one now has been a series of calls to Helen McEntee. You might remember that her house had to be evacuated last week. She wasn't there, but her family were there. And, you know, let's not come in too far after the, you know, different threats and protests and people who gathered outside the other, I think it was at the time it was the health minister. But this one is a big security alert that makes the front pages of the papers today, because they're saying that a notorious rapist by the name of Michael Murray is being investigated following a third phone call threat against Helen McEntee. And that's a front story in the Mirror today. The other papers that pick up on it follow on the Wednesday issue that sparked the evacuation of Helen McEntee's husband and children from the family home at the time. And over the weekend, then many politicians were coming out and saying that this is a step too far. It won't be tolerated. The family home is sacrosanct and sacred. But having a home, of course, should be everybody's right for those who need to have one provided if they can't provide for themselves. But an ever-increasing amount of people who just can't get a house because they've got too expensive, or they can't get enough mortgage, or indeed they're constantly being outbid. And many of them, of course, are couch surfing, staying with friends, or, as we see again in the papers, we're reminded by Katrina Toomey at Penny Dinners, there are still an ever-increasing amount of individuals who are either couch surfing, living in their cars, or seeking shelter in tents. And the big issue, of course, that people need to focus on is the 17 or 18,000 people who are homeless that are Irish have actually, you know, nothing to look forward to with regards to a roof over their head anytime soon. And I don't mean to come across really as being anti-migrants who want to come here and start a new life. Rent was never so high. The availability of housing was never so low. And I suppose really, we have to be realistic at this stage, don't we? The Echo this morning saying homeless levels continue to rise. Norma Foley then is looking at the life and times of our young children, and she's saying, and I don't know whether she actually has any power as a sole politician in Ireland to take on the huge tech giants, but she says in this morning's Sun, I'll ban social media for kids under the age of 13 if the tech giants don't protect our Irish children. Now, this, you know, could be notional, or she might have some kind of a real plan, but she says, we have children as young as 6 and 7 years of age now that are being exposed to content that no parent would want them to see. They're being groomed. Obviously, this has been going on for quite some time, but never as bad as it's been in the recent past, where adults are engaging with children, pretending that they're young people themselves, and then ending up sharing content that's wholly inappropriate for a child to see. So it goes from bad to worse. And then, of course, with regards to our children, they are exposed to a lot of other issues, and much of it has to do with the shocking diets that some of them have. The junk food diets of so many children these days, particularly when they reach teenage age, and it's having a detrimental effect on their brain, their memory, their power of recall. The Star this morning in a sidebar says teenagers with junk food filled diets are now causing long-term damage to their brains. Memory loss, concentration issues, it is destroying their brains. And those effects will be seen right into and all the way across adulthood. There's also a very interesting one that talks about health as well. And this is on the inside pages of the English Times. And I know I spoke some weeks ago about the power of marketing and advertising. Much of it that's been criticized lately is the huge marketing and pharmaceutical and medicinal industry that has been built up around menopause. This morning, there's a report out from Witch magazine that looks at collagen creams, detox teas, vitamin shots, things like that, and they're finding that they're mostly an expensive waste of money. So go check that out. They examined the ingredients, the price, and all of the health claims made by 6 different categories of products. Now, I'm just looking at collagen creams, detox teas, and vitamin shots. Like they said, a typical example would be a vitamin shot that was usually cost £2 for 60 mils. So when you scale that up, it's the same price per litre as a bottle of Moët and Chandon champagne. But the £2 shot, the main ingredient is typically fruit juice. And that's it. fruit juice, boys and girls. It was also dismissive of targeted painkillers, saying that when you pay for the premium product of the painkiller, you're essentially just paying for the packaging, or the better packaging, or the more glossy packaging. Then they looked at collagen creams and supplements, and they found that while some studies support their effectiveness for healthy bones and joints and skin, the benefits are actually unproven. And it said that when applied topically, as in on the skin, the collagen molecules are too big to penetrate the skin. And that it's unlikely that they can reach the deep layers of the skin to give any effect of a long-lasting change. Now, collagen, of course, is supposed to, isn't it supposed to tighten and re-energize and revitalize the skin, so you ultimately end up looking younger, I suppose. They also looked... I'll just do a fourth one for now. They also looked at hair loss shampoos. Unlikely to work for most people. They said our latest research has exposed unproven claims of some of the health products that consumers can end up paying a premium for health benefits that are either questionable or could be found more cheaply elsewhere. And amongst them, hair loss shampoos. So a lot of marketing and a lot of advertising going into these. And we're talking about, you know, a wellness industry now that in the UK alone shows that the average person is spending just under £500 a year on fitness, cosmetic and nutritional products. And you got to wonder on what Witch is saying, is it a waste of money? And are people just being targeted and believing marketing and advertising or influencers and stuff that's happening with regards to what they consume online or television advertising? Story that was making the news there. Your thoughts on that are welcome, incidentally. Text 0868 104 106. Story that was making the news there this morning has to do with driving and speeding. There were 12,000 fewer drivers caught for speeding in the last 12 months, but bizarrely, road deaths have soared nonetheless. So some could say, there were nearly 144,000 people caught speeding in the first 11 months of last year. That's an insane high figure, but it's down on 155,000 for the same period last year. But we also know that speed checks and road checks are way down as well. So while speeding is down, the amount of people that have been detected for using a phone while driving continues to rise. So this is the latest scourge now. You have speeding, you have drink driving, you have drug driving, you have careless driving and stuff like that. Mobile phone use while driving, it continues to be on the increase because they are addictive. Mobile phones can be very addictive. It's a fear of staying in touch and not wanting to miss out on anything. There is a veteran driving instructor that makes the red tops today, a fellow by the name of Andy McGinnity. He's got a driving school for 14 years and he says that he's noticed the change in driver habits. Tailgating now is a very common problem. Up the arse of the person in front of you, people driving up behind you almost bumper to bumper, kind of willing you, you know, willing you to pull in and let them pass you. It's a pain, he says, and I hate saying it, but women are just as bad as men in tailgating and in aggressive driving, he says. For some reason, people just want to get to wherever they are faster, and they are willing to take all of the chances, and that's when mistakes happen. And you know, you don't really get to your destination a whole lot faster, to be honest with you. I mean, we're not on the autobahn where you really could, and you know, and always see improvements in roads, and the Macroom bypass is superb. But at the same time, how much time do you actually save? So they say that, and he goes on to say that even today, when most cars have Bluetooth, the amount of people seen driving with the phone up to their ears is astonishing. And he also talks about the conditions in which people drive and, you know, regarding Irish weather. No lights on. I mean, you see that bizarrely all of the time, don't you? Having the fog light on when you don't need it, not having your rear fog light on when you don't need it, when you do need it. So it's an interesting one. And then the uninsured drivers, of course, for every single insurance renewal that you are paying for when your renewal comes up, there's at least €35 in that insurance renewal to cover uninsured drivers in Ireland. So Dublin obviously has the most because it's the major city. Cork is second because it's the second major city. But the Motor Insurance Bureau of Ireland continue to pay out huge amounts of claims for people who are the victims of uninsured drivers. And imagine, I'd have to have a think about that. Do uninsured drivers, are they allowed to claim as well if they're injured while driving a car that is uninsured? And then, you know, you see these stories making the Workplace Relations Commission, and I do know that a lot of the time the papers like to publish the more kind of bizarre and strange ones. There's another one making the Mail today of a community worker. She was sacked just before reaching retirement for taking a pair of socks from a refugee shelter. She's been awarded €15,000 in compensation. The Workplace Relations Committee adjudication officer said that the decision to sack her left a lot to be desired. And so say all of us. She had a 27-year unblemished record. She says that she had seen some socks on top of boxes in the reception area of some former school that was being used for Ukrainian refugees. She had taken the socks because she thought they were going to be thrown out with the boxes. Apparently, the manager came to her and said, return them immediately. And she did so and was shocked to find out that she was then subsequently sacked. It sounds almost Dickensian, like something from the 1800s that you could sack somebody for a little bit of confusion over a pair of socks. I mean, think about that. Anyway, she also said that it has a shocking impact on her life. She's been fired. Her situation now is almost impossible because she can't find a job because she's 65. Nobody wants to hire her and she can't claim the pension until she's 66. So I hope that €15,000 will tide her over till it's a shame, really. You could have an unblemished work record for 28 years and your working career ends up like that. Publicans have been told, and to be honest with you, I don't know. I mean, pubs like everybody else. I don't know when was the last time I actually saw, not that I was looking too closely, but I don't recall seeing any pub with a list of prices for all of their pints and shorts and whiskies and bottles and stuff like that. But they're being reminded in the papers today that you've got to clearly display the cost of your drinks or you will be fined €3,000 every time you don't. Focus on pulling pints, not pulling fast ones, is a story that makes this morning's mail. But the Echo then has a lovely article with Michael O'Donovan of the Castle Inn on the South Main Street, because he has been confirmed as the president-elect of the Vintners Federation of Ireland. He looked after the Cork Vintners for many a year. Now we'll head up the entire country of Vintners. And he says, what's the main competitor now for pubs? Not necessarily, well, I suppose indirectly off licenses for sure, and probably supermarkets. But the main competitor now is people's front rooms, he says. The ever-increasing amount of people who are just drinking at home, and a lot of the reason, of course, is because it's cheaper. One man who will never have any problem with regards to a few bob in his bank account is Michael O'Leary. He is going to get a proposed €100 million bonus. And according to the Star this morning, he is quoted as comparing himself to the Premier League managers like Pep Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp. He says he's fed up with folk moaning about payouts for big wigs while the football bosses pocket a fortune without getting any flack whatsoever. It's a private company, I suppose. They're entitled to pay their staff and their boss whatever they want. €100 million bonus. What would you spend on it? And then, of course, we're never too far from issues involving our weather and our climate and climate change. And one of the big problems with regards to climate change is methane gas. Do you know where that comes from? The flatulence of cows. The flatulence and passing wind or farting of cows. Breeding cows now, apparently, that actually flatulate, if that's a word, less, could be very good for climate change, according to the papers this morning. Another one, they think that one way of getting cows to to pass less wind is to feed them seaweed. I wonder, would it work with human beings, do you think? A seaweed-based diet? I've had seaweed chips once or twice. They're an acquired taste. And the other one then has to do with plastic. Just to remind you that they say that they are now finding an entire bin lorry worth of plastic entering the world's oceans every 60 seconds. And I'm talking about a big lorry load of plastic entering the world's oceans every 60 seconds. And they figure there's about 11 million tons of plastic waste now sitting on the floor of our oceans, and it's going from bad to worse. And then I probably should have mentioned this when I was talking about health and wellness, but there's another one. Talks today not about children and what children are eating, but what you are feeding your dogs. Apparently, Dog Trust in the UK is appealing to pet owners to weigh your dog's food. This is very interesting because they say there was one way that you can tell if your dog is a fatty or overweight. If you can't feel their ribs, they're overweight. I mean, if it were a human, you'd almost say they'd be deemed as being emaciated. But in a dog, it's completely different. So unless you can feel easily now your dog's ribs, it's an indicator they're overweight. I leave that up to yourself. I know more and more people do because, of course, you have different breeds of dogs that are more susceptible to putting on weight. I mean, it's a bit like a human being. You walk down the aisles of a supermarket and you can feel the calories adding on before you ever picked up the chocolate bar or the biscuits.
Call Neil now. 0818
104 106. The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Involved in the conversation, text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. Firstly, I want to apologise to Paula Crotty. I didn't get an opportunity to chat with her on Friday and had wanted to do so because I watched the primetime show earlier in the week, which dealt with, of course, the ever-increasing amount of people who are seeking treatment for eating disorders. And it's actually, when you look at some of the information that's now available internationally, the amount of people now seeking treatment for eating disorders has sharply increased during the pandemic and after the pandemic. And the stats that are out now is showing that approximately 80 people die in Ireland as a result of an eating disorder every year. In fact, eating disorders, if you're talking about anorexia or bulimia, they have the highest mortality rate of any psychiatric disorder. More people are dying than any other psychiatric disorder on an annual basis. And then, when you look even closer, as I was doing, females with anorexia, 200 times the suicide rate for females. That's the mortality rate higher. They're astonishing figures, of course. And they often describe it, and I was reading an article this morning that experts describe an eating disorder as a mental illness with physical symptoms. I mention Paula Crotty's name because she joins me by phone, and her own daughter Jennifer passed away at the age of 29 in March of last year following many years of struggling. They all did. They all did their very best, but sadly it wasn't to be. Paula, good morning.
Good morning.
And I watched your contribution to Primetime last week as well. Aren't those statistics shocking? I wonder, are people aware of how devastating it is or how much of a control a disorder like this can have on an individual? And I suppose also their families.
Well, I mean, I think like most experiences in life, really, you don't fully appreciate the consequences of an eating disorder on a person or on families unless you go through it or unless you have it in your family group. And I suppose really, you know, in all the years that we've been fighting, you know, an eating disorder and trying to get the Minister for Health and the HSE to understand how significant it all is, the services are still wholly inadequate and they're not listening to the lived experience.
I was just looking at those numbers. There are 3 public beds across Ireland which provide specialist treatment for adults with eating disorders. 3. And there are 16 for children. 3 for adults.
Well, I suppose you have to qualify that even more, Neil, and say that you have 3 eating disorder beds for the area that it is. They're in St. Vincent's University Hospital, and they're only for the catchment area of St. Vincent's Hospital. So there are 3 eating disorder beds that have been there for the last probably 20 plus years for that area only. So what that means is that if there are other patients that need to be, if there are patients that need to be admitted to hospital, they're generally admitted to a general hospital.
Yes. Yeah.
In with medics who really don't have any experience or specialised.
That's exactly
training.
Well. That's well put. But where it should be, targeted, specific beds that would be, you know, very much in the discipline of dealing with somebody with an eating disorder.
That's right. Yeah. It's like putting a patient who's diagnosed with cancer into a stroke ward.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
saying yeah. they look after you there, even though they've never looked after anybody with cancer, they look after you anyway.
So the waiting lists are too long, the inpatient beds are too scarce, the promises were all made but never delivered upon.
That's right. That's right.
And do you mind me talking a little bit about Jennifer? Are you comfortable with that? Because I don't wish to upset you.
Okay, no, I can do that.
Okay. And, like, I guess it'd be fair to say that no two typical disorders are similar, are they? But when did it become apparent that perhaps Jennifer was struggling?
Jennifer was about 20 at the time when we realised that she was struggling, and I suppose she came to us really and said that she was struggling, and then we went to seek help, and I suppose she ended up in hospital really very quickly, and after about 16 months in hospital, that hadn't really progressed her any bit at all. She was still struggling an awful lot. We ended up going to London for almost 12 months, and then came home, and unfortunately came home to no services, and any work that had been done over there, or any improvements that she had made, there was nothing to back it up here. And I suppose that's what everybody is saying. I'm involved in Cared Ireland, which is a group for parents and carers, and all the parents and carers in it, most of the parents and carers in it, are saying the same thing: is, you know, people are admitted to hospital, but then they're discharged from hospital, but there's no follow up from an outpatient basis. And that was certainly
your case.
That was certainly the way for Jennifer. And, you know, I mean, I suppose, except after so many years, that there are people who die from illnesses all the time. And I suppose, like I had said, you know, an eating disorder is like a cancer in a way, is that it affects some people, and there's treatment that can work for some people, and there unfortunately isn't for others. But it certainly doesn't help that we don't have the services on the ground to help our loved ones that are struggling.
And what were those struggles that she had?
I suppose she described a voice in her head that was telling her that she was fat, and that she didn't deserve to live, and she didn't deserve to be happy, and it took the control away from herself. I suppose I believe that we actually all have this little voice in our head that's telling us things all the time, and for most of us, we have control over that voice, and we know what we want ourselves. And I understand for the eating disorder patient, that, or the eating disorder person, that they don't have that control, because that voice in their head is so much stronger.
Yes, it's constantly there. They can't turn it off.
And when their BMI drops, they're losing control that much more. It makes them mentally, it makes them not as strong to be able to fight that. Mm. Obviously, for some it works, and it works very well. And it's lovely to see that people can recover from it, and they can recover from it, actually. People can and do recover.
Oh, listen, we certainly saw a couple of cases of that on primetime last week, but sadly not for your beautiful daughter. From a psychiatric point of view, or from a counselling point of view, was anything ever identified that acted as a trigger for Jennifer? You know, was she overly influenced by social media, what she saw, the world of other people, the perfect life? Did anybody ever say anything nasty to her about her body or body image? Do you know?
No. Not that we don't know what was. We don't know what was at the bottom of it for Jennifer. Jennifer was, she was bright, she was bubbly, she was smart, she was funny, she was sporty. I suppose one would say in a lot of ways that she had so much going for her. And I don't know. Sometimes there's something that triggers. In Jennifer's case, we don't.
You don't.
We don't have any idea what that was.
Yeah,
don't have any idea what that was.
Paula.
No, I was just going to say, you know, I suppose my call out is to the HSE. is to hear what's actually happening. And I suppose listening to Mary Butler on prime time the other night, and she's talking about all these things that she's done and she's doing, and the fact of the matter is there are more CAMHS and AMHS services, but still a lot of the people that are working in the CAMHS and AMHS don't have eating disorder experience. They're psychiatric trained nurses and doctors, and they're specialising, but they don't have eating disorder. Most of them, a lot of them, don't have eating disorder experience. Therefore, when the patients, the people with eating disorders and their families are going, they still can't help them enough.
What was it like then as a family who were part of the struggle and trying to help? And I know it must be your worst nightmare to have gone through what you went through, the loss of a child, but did you feel very helpless, or did you feel like lost in the struggle?
Yeah, I would say definitely felt very lost. I'm a nurse, and a lot of people used to say, you know, you're a nurse, your husband's a medic, you guys, it's easier for you, you know. But actually the fact is we didn't know. And Jennifer got sick, and we thought that she'd be back in college in 9 months' time. No, we didn't know. And I suppose for many years we felt we were never included really in her care enough. And you know, we had no support around us. We didn't know any other people around us that we could go to for help and support. And that made it very hard. And I suppose that was really all part of the reason for setting up Cared Ireland. Is we know our 130 plus parents and carers who at least can learn from each other and help each other and support each other. Where, you know, from a family standpoint, it was very difficult. When Jennifer went to London, we got a lot of support over there. We got a lot of family support over there. And I suppose that was, for me, that was, or for us, I mean, we still talk about the sessions that we had over there with them.
And that was good, because she came back, and Jennifer came back, and she went back to college, following in her mother's footsteps, wanting to be a nurse, and she was getting on quite well, but it didn't last.
No.
And as a parent, then, all of the sit-downs and the chats and the cajoling, or the trying to, you know, help, or, you know, like she wanted to live.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, she, you know, the thing about people who struggle with an eating disorder, they don't choose an eating disorder. They're not looking to be thin. It's not about image. They don't want to be sick. They want to live, and they want to be happy, and they want to have a life, whatever a normal life is. They want to live that life. So no, they don't choose it. But just sometimes it's really hard, and you know, that's what people are crying out for. We need services here who will help these people that are struggling with eating disorders, and we don't have them. And they talk about, you know, that the best place to recover is in the community. And it probably is true. It would be better that the path for recovery would take place in the community with experienced, specialised eating disorder trained.
And what is that? Is that counselling? Is that psychiatric intervention? Is it dietitians, nutritional experts? All of that, is it?
But let me finish that. My point is that would be ideal. And that would be the best way for it. But the problem is they don't have those services in the community. If they had those services in the community, there probably wouldn't be as much need for beds. But because the services aren't in the community, because the services are not in the community, that's why people are needing more beds. And yes, we're talking about people who are specifically trained in eating disorders. Because eating disorders are a mental illness, they're not like any other mental illness. And they don't have the people that are trained. I know when Jennifer was in hospital, I know there were staff that were giving out to her for not eating or hiding her food. And the one thing that we are saying to our parents, and we're teaching our parents because we know that it's the right way, you don't give out with them, you don't fight with them.
Probably makes it worse, does it, Paula?
You're fueling the voice in their head saying, yeah, look what you're doing to your mother, look what you're doing to the nurse, you're so bad, you don't deserve. And they don't have the training. And then you go into the community cams, and not all of them, but there are so many of them, and still there are so many of them that are blaming the parents. Just take them home and make them eat. It's not like that. It's not literally about the food. There's far more to it than that.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we don't have the trained services. We don't have enough of the trained services. And for as many as Mary Butler is talking about that she has brought out, they're still not properly trained teams for eating disorders.
Because this is an illness, a disorder, psychiatric issue that can take years to successfully fix. Isn't it true? It's not. There isn't a surgery involved in this. It isn't kind of a course of antibiotics or even chemo. It's longer than that.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
It's a very slow process.
And even when they're doing much better, there is always a possibility of relapsing. It's an ongoing thing. It's an ongoing illness. But there is recovery.
Yeah. But why do you think more and more, I think campaigners in primetime described it as a tsunami of eating disorders, severe, the amount of people suffering. Why is it getting worse? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I believe social media has a huge part to play. And I think the pressures that are on young people today is far worse than it was 10 years ago or 20 years, certainly 20 years ago and 30 years ago. And I think that it's children and adolescents and adults that struggle. And it's the struggles in life that's bringing it on. And I think that the tsunami of it is because there aren't services there that they can get into straight away. And you know, Mary Butler talks about, and the NCPED talk about, you know, having very quick turnover time to assess somebody. But then once they're assessed, it can take months for them to actually get into services. So if we had more services, if we had more people that were trained in eating disorders, and if they got the services quicker, then it would be far more beneficial.
I know, but Paula, it's like every single aspect of our health system, up to and including a hiring embargo within the HSE, where they cannot hire staff, they cannot replace staff that leave, they cannot replace staff that retire. We're going backwards. I mean, here's a text for you. This is harrowing to hear, Neil, your conversation with Paula. My daughter is nearly 11. There's a child in our class diagnosed with an eating disorder. It's such a scary thing, and to think that it can happen at such a young age. She's saying that the daughter is in primary school with an 11-year-old in her class diagnosed with an eating disorder at 11.
Yeah. And we've had one of the parents on our group whose son was 9. And I have to ask myself, what is it about our world that our 9-year-olds and 11-year-olds and 13-year-olds aren't thinking about themselves and how, where they're going and what they're getting for their birthday and their birthday present? What has changed? Why? And why can't we look after them now?
I don't know. I don't know what's changed. I mean, I could automatically go straight to, you know, talk this morning by the education minister warning that she's going to outlaw social media for under 13s. I don't mean to oversimplify it and say, well, it's because of what they're seeing online, or they see everybody else in a perfect life, or they want to be like you know, somebody they might admire. It's probably multifaceted, but I'm wondering, is that one of them? You know, social media, the amount of access they have at a way too young age.
Well, I suppose who am I to say nobody should give them their phones at a young age? But I suppose it's out there all the time that it's not good, and it's not, social media isn't good. And if they have phones, they have access to social media, and it. I don't know that's not the cause of it. But it certainly, I would say, plays a big part in it.
Yeah, I know there are probably many different reasons, but another one could well be the peer pressure that children might well be under, or young people or teenagers, or an unkind word or bullying, or somebody making a smart comment about you that that hurts.
Yeah. For sure. There's I suppose many unknown reasons, and I don't have the answer to that part. All I know is that for as many people are struggling, is we need to have the services that are out there to look after them, and this is part of life now, and the numbers are growing, and the HSE need to get their act together, and they need to bring out services that we as parents of people who are struggling with eating disorders, have children or adults struggling with eating disorders or any mental health difficulties, we need to have the services there for them. Because we as parents, what's happening to us as parents is we're being left out of the loop within the CAMHS and AMHS services. And when they're discharged from hospital or from CAMHS, we as parents are told, no, you bring them home and you continue to feed them, and that's that. And there's no dietitians, and there's no occupational therapists,
If it was that simple, take them home and feed them yourself. I mean, that's insulting, isn't it? Where you see a psychiatric disorder in females with anorexia 200 times the suicide rate for females. 200 times more. I mean, that's...
Well, it's for all of them. It's, you know, you just talked about an 11-year-old, and you know, they're in their teens and 20s and 30s and 40s, and there are people who have been struggling in their 50s and 60s as well. And the fact is the HSE know all of those. They're not listening to us. They think they're doing great with what they're doing, but actually they're not doing great. And they're not providing the services that they've said they've done. They're not even giving the funding. There was no funding this year, and there was no funding last year. And you know, if you brought in the funding, you could hire the people, but because you're not having the funding, that's why we're not having.
Oh my God!
The services that are out there either.
And the things they can find money for that really don't count in the big picture. You know, it's sickening. It really is. What?
Well, there are a lot of people that are struggling, and there are a lot of parents that are struggling. And I suppose I'll call out for caredireland@gmail.com, which is the email address for any parents who are struggling. Is that we have our group, and I suppose we always say our expertise is our experience. None of us are trained in any of this in any way, shape or form. We've just lived it, so
isn't that the kind of experience that would help for somebody who's listening now and might maybe think that they might themselves have an issue, or they're observing something with a son or a daughter? Clearly going through a HSE route, you're going to hit an awful lot of brick walls. So what advice would you be giving, say, a parent, or, you know, what should they be looking out for? How should they react with a, when I say a child now, you know, it could be teens or 18 or 19, but like what should they be looking out for?
Well, I suppose it's, you know, without making people paranoid, if you are concerned about your loved one's eating habits, try and have a discussion. The first port of call would always be the GP, and the hope that the GP then would refer you on to either CAMHS, which is the child and adolescent program, or AMHS, which is the adult mental health program. Body Wise are a very strong body who look after, their charity that look after eating disorders. They have really good educational programs. We used to run workshops where Jill Todd used to come over and they brought Jill and they do a new Maudsley program, which is really very good.
Who is Jill Todd? My apologies.
Sorry, Jill Todd is a nurse in England who used to work in the Maudsley Hospital in London with eating disorders. So we had her coming over for weekends and giving workshops to parents. And BodyWise brought her over and they are now doing a very similar program, which is really very good for parents and carers.
But parents can't do it on their own though, can they? I mean, sitting down, having a chat with your loved one or, you know, trying to, you know, coax them.
No.
That's not going to get you across the line.
No. And the sooner, I suppose, that you can get in to help and get some help, the better it is. For your loved one.
Okay.
And I suppose it's not to wait around. Get the help you can, and I would say for the parents is to, you know, talk to BodyWise and contact us at caredireland@gmail.com, and we're the parents group and we will be there and we will support parents and carers. We don't have any people who are suffering on the group because I think that could be very triggering for them. But we're certainly for the
lived experience
and the parents.
Lived experiences. Yeah. Thank you so much, Paula, for taking the call. I'll give out those very important numbers and email addresses in a few minutes' time. But thank you for being so open and so honest, and our condolences in the passing of your beautiful daughter, Jennifer. Thanks so much for taking the call.
Thank you very much.
All the best. Back after the break. Get involved in the conversation if you have something to add. Text 0868104106. If you have a story you'd like to share, you can always email neil@redfm.ie. Back after these.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
I just want to jump in and I will catch up with texts and calls after 10, but some important numbers for you. Eating Disorder Centre Cork is the Cork number. It's 453-9900. 453-9900. BodyWise is the national helpline. It's an 01 number, 21079061. 21079061. And Paula Crotty's group that you referred to, their email address is caredireland@gmail.com. caredireland@gmail.com. So be part of the conversation if you've had experience of anorexia nervosa, bulimia nervosa, or binge eating, which would be binging and purging. Get in touch if you'd like to share. Text 0868104106. Back after 10.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
All right, everybody, some texts in a few minutes' time, but it's Monday, the Monday Munchies, again this week with Luso of Ballincollig. For everyone who loves chocolate and for everyone who loves cake. And we have a gigantic double-layer coffee sponge to give away this morning. I've actually seen a photograph of it. It's got the most beautiful, writing and icing on the top of it. Monday Munchie winners, congratulations. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous cake, and you can dig into it with everybody in the workplace. It really is a delight. So much effort goes into these cakes. They really are wonderful creations all on their own. So a double layer coffee sponge. We need to know who you are and where you are. So text or WhatsApp who you are and where you're working to 0868 104 106, and we'll start the shout outs in a half an hour's time. So get texting. And also, can I mention, I got a double winner today, because you might recall on air, I spoke to Carol last week and she was talking about all of the staff on the Cross River Ferry, because they kept everybody very safe last week. There was an allegation of somebody suspected of driving under the influence of an intoxicant. One witness seeing somebody swigging from a bottle of Jägermeister. So the ferry was held until the Gardaí came. Carol was on the ferry and she said that the staff on the ferry did such a great job keeping everybody safe and waiting for the Gardaí that we should organise a gift from Luso. So those wonderful Luso boxes that we were giving away last week, which is like, I don't know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There must be 20 cakes in there. All sorts of different delicious cakes in that box of goodies from Lusso will be also delivered today to the staff at the Cross River Ferry. So for the rest of you, text and WhatsApp who you are and where you are to 086 8104 106. And as well, today we start a new giveaway with the Metro Bull Hotel. So it's dinner for two in the Metro Bull Hotel in the Met Bar and Restaurant. Delicious breakfast the following morning, and you'll have a wonderful overnight stay in the Metropole overlooking the River Lee. So they're 127 years in business now at the Metropole Hotel. Boy, that is a long, long time, going from strength to strength. So when you talk about the Met, might have a bit of fun a little later on this morning, where you met your partner, your loved one, where you met. So the most entertaining story wins the daily prize for the Met, where you met your partner. Get texting on that, text 0868104106. Ideally, we'll get calls on air. And the best one today is to where you met and fell in love. The wackier, funnier, more off-the-wall calls always seem to win these prizes. So get thinking about that. Text 0868104106. Back after the break.
Call Neil now. 0818104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
And by text, I need to call out the bull on the threat that suddenly appeared to Helen McEntee's house. This is just deflecting from the chronic behaviour of the guards in Wicklow and her lack of ability to do the job that she has. This is just to rush through legislation to put Irish citizens who are concerned about immigration back into their box. If the mainstream media or government reported the day of the week to me, I wouldn't. I would go and check the calendar, says Mary. It's Monday, Mary, and you don't have to check it. Helen McEntee is threatened with being bombed out of her home, which is appalling. I'm sure legislation will be passed to protect her and all politicians. Well, what about the people around the country who are having their houses shot up and petrol bombed? And even more importantly, what about the people caught up in it because of mistaken identity? No one is ever held to account for any of this. A lot of that is kind of feuding, isn't it? It could be gang feuding, it could be family feuding. Will the government protect the elite of Irish society or the people of Ireland who they're actually paid to protect? Morning, it just goes to show that what the UK is doing is working. As in, if you come here illegally, we'll send you to Rwanda. It's our government who hasn't the balls to do the same. They will only do what the EU tells them to do. Morning, your headline news this morning is Helen McEntee and her emergency legislation to return UK migrants back to the UK. Well, migrants who came from the UK back to the UK. James Cleverly, the Home Secretary, was on the news this morning and he stated categorically that there isn't a hope in hell that they will be taking them back. It's Ireland's problem now. Herein lies the major problem in this country, and it's going to be worse. Thousands upon thousands are going to saturate Ireland. Can you see where the problem starts, Neil? McEntee, O'Gorman and Harris. And they have to go, plain and simple. Three of them together don't make one politician. We're the laughing stock of world politics. Please read this out. Great show, says Anthony. Well, the likes of your McEntee and O'Gorman and Harris are saying they're coming up with an emergency fast-track plan to send them back. But yet, the British are saying, we won't take them back. It's awful actually to be talking about human beings like this, isn't it? Individuals, men, women and children who are coming, you know, to Europe for want of a better life. But you have to have documentation, firstly. You have to have some kind of identification. You have to go through the proper channels. I get where we're at with regards to Ukrainian war refugees. But even at this stage, that's totally saturated and it's becoming more and more frustrating for people. On pubs having to display their prices, the reason they don't put up prices on display is because as the night goes on, more and more pubs are putting the prices up. Well, that is true. And I gave you examples of that last week. Insane prices for pints in a suburban Dublin pub. And sadly then, on eating disorders, there is a big waiting list. A lot of the services are only seeing adolescents 15 and over. One of the problems now also is young boys who want to tone up their bodies, but they're not fully developed yet. Then you have the pressures that all young people are seeing on social media. So keep those texts coming. Text 0868104106 by email. In relation to international protection applicants into Ireland, just has our city councillors put any plan in place for the influx of applicants that are arriving in Cork and those that will be arriving en masse now when the UK starts relocating to Rwanda. At present, 80% of all international protection applicants arrive in Ireland from Northern Ireland. We're very lucky so far that these people seem to want to arrive in Dublin. But once it gets overcrowded in Dublin, which it is now, they'll travel to other cities in greater numbers. With a headless and toothless government, the result can only be an increase in people living on the streets of our city and an increase in crime. Disillusion of our young people being squeezed out of the housing market to make room for people I have no connection to, while I watch the destruction of Irish society, the loss of our children to foreign shores, saying goodbye at airports as you make the last eye contact, visualizing the unborn grandchildren in their eyes in another land, says Jim. And one quick one here then with regards to speed and all of the reasons why people are in such a goddamn rush. It's because the world has sped up. Everything around us has sped up. Faster elevators, faster laundry, faster services, faster cars. Why should driving a car be slower? You should speed up on the roads too. The problem is not acceleration, but no proper driving training. Excluding the statistical percentage of idiots who, regardless of limits and prohibitions, will always exceed the speed limit to drive under the influence of stimulants. But most people can and do drive faster than the regulations allow. People driving slower, Neil, actually pose a greater danger. Let everyone answer for themselves what feelings a slow-moving car arouses in them when they're driving to work, for example. Most people probably think about how to overtake such a car, don't they? And then try afterwards to make up the lost time. The situation is the same on expressways. At a speed limit of 120 kilometres, a slower car causes the line of cars behind it either to slow down or, as many do, to try to overtake the slow car. Anyway, the state's pressure should be directed not to speed limits, but to driver training. Theory with internal exams for practical training, manoeuvring, practice of faster driving, faster manoeuvres, faster braking techniques. People should drive faster, and those who cannot or do not want to, if they're not in a hurry, should use public transport. I think you'd call it utilitarianism. Kind regards, Mike. Mike says we need a faster, more trained society, faster drivers who have the skills, and the slower drivers who are causing more accidents should take the bus. Text 0868104106. Here's a man that has taken the bus. He's travelled overland. He's done many different trips. I don't think he ever got on an airplane, though. But he's travelled around the world three times. Now, it's amazing the calls that I've had on air of late of people who really have, you know, just got out there and lived life and travelled. Now, I know there's a chap from County Waterford who cycled from Ballyduff Upper to India a few years ago on his rougher. He since now has settled in Australia. And I've had amazing stories like that over the past few days. I want to chat to PJ Cotter, who is a similar one. PJ, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
I'm good. So, in total, you have travelled without ever leaving the ground, I believe, three times around the world?
Well, there was one that was only truly around the world, but the most interesting one was to travel from Australia back to Middleton without getting on a plane. That was the most difficult one and the most challenging.
Okay. There were others, though, were there as well, before I drill into that? What were the other ones?
Well, I travelled around to India, around South America and that, but it was the one coming home from Australia that gained the most interest, okay, and for me and media.
That was the 90s, was it?
Yes, it was all based on, there was a TV challenge in the mid-90s, I can't remember the year, to find two people from Ireland to travel overland from Ireland to Australia with a three-person TV crew following them. I applied for it as one of 8,000 people. I didn't get it, and I was fuming that I didn't get it because I knew I could do it. And so the people, the TV crew couldn't achieve it, so I said, right, I'll show you. I'll do it myself.
Oh, they actually didn't manage, as in people started but didn't finish, is it?
Yes, that was the problem with most of the trips, all of them. And I was just lucky doing it on my own a long way around.
Okay, but you did it in reverse, is it? As opposed to Ireland to Australia, you did Australia to Ireland. So You never took a plane. You always travelled over land and sea, though. You had to go over sea as well.
Yes, this one now what I did was slightly different. What I did is basically I saved up £2,000. It was 1996, I think, start of 96. My father dropped me at the roundabout in Middleton, and I hitchhiked to London. And got to London then, went to a travel agent, and I said, I want a one-way ticket to Australia, valid for a year.
How old were you?
A few interesting stops. I was 24 or 5, I think.
With £2,000 in your pocket, at the age of 25.
£2,000 in my pocket.
One-way ticket to Oz.
But what I'd done before I went was I got a New Zealand working holiday visa. So that was my backup for money on the way.
Okay.
And so a quarter of my money was gone with a plane ticket. I flew from London to Los Angeles, had a week or two there, then on to Fiji, nearly a month there, then on to the Cook Islands. And when I got to New Zealand, I was nearly broke. But I'd had fun along the way.
And you took the long route. Yeah, you worked, did you?
I worked in New Zealand and I was struggling to get a job. But I got a job for 2 weeks in New Zealand on a farm. And I know
what were you doing? Shearing sheep, is it, or what?
No, I was meant to be milking cows for 2 weeks and I never did. I ended up driving a bulldozer.
Oh, okay. Easier work.
I went there in April and I was meant to stay for 2 weeks, but I was still there in September and I was getting itchy feet, but I was saving money. And so in a way of travelling around New Zealand to get another job and things like that to save money for the journey home, I ended up returning to the same farm and staying there till Christmas. So then I was itching to go travelling and I thought I had enough money to attempt an overland home. So I got all my vaccinations in New Zealand for Southeast Asia and Africa because I wasn't sure which way I was going to come home. It depended on how I could get a ship out of Australia. So I flew on to Australia, spent a few months in Australia. I'd worked in Australia as well for 2 months because I was getting really good money and a job there.
What did you do in Oz? Where were you? What city?
I wasn't in a city. I stay away from cities as much as possible. I was about 6 hours north of Melbourne in Australia, and I was working with tomato harvesting machinery, which I happen to have experience on.
Okay.
I'd worked on tomato harvesting equipment in a few other countries, so it was harvest there.
There's a machine that picks the tomatoes from the vine, is it?
Yes, for ketchup. But it's like you're doing 30 tons per hour.
Oh, so it's
industrial scale.
Oh, my God. You'd never look at ketchup again.
And again, itchy feet were calling me. And I remember I went to Melbourne to see the Grand Prix in March 97. And that's when I really set out. As soon as the Grand Prix was on, set out to head for Middleton.
Okay.
And I hadn't a clue where I was going. I bought two guidebooks, one for Southeast Asia and one for Africa. Because I didn't know, nor care where I went, really. And met a woman in Melbourne, and we decided to drive across Australia. So we drove to Perth. And I had a bit of adventure on the way. Got to Perth in Western Australia, couldn't find a ship going to South Africa.
Did you part from your travelling companion in Perth, yeah?
Oh, God, yeah. I had a lot of that travelling. You meet somebody like-minded, going the same direction. You join forces for a day or a week or longer.
Where do you stay when you're? How long does it take to drive across Australia?
We done it in less than a week.
Oh, and do you sleep in the car or do you get hotel?
No, we found places along the way, do all cheap lodges, and sometimes slept under the stars. You don't be too worried because we were both money conscious, so we didn't know how much our trips would cost.
So when you were leaving Perth, then did you get like a freighter ship, or you didn't go on a cruise liner?
No,
what'd you get?
No, I couldn't get a ship going to South Africa. I wanted to go to Cape Town and come home through Africa, even though I'd never been to Africa. And so I said, right, there's only one cure, keep moving north. So I headed up the west coast of Australia, hitchhiking on these big trucks, these road trains. And after a few days, I got to a very small town called Broome. And I was taking a break there for a few days. And to make a long story short, I overheard the conversation that there was a boat going to be leaving for Asia in the following week.
Mm-hmm.
And I made a few inquiries, phoned the exporter, and give them a few good stories of my animal husbandry experience and all this kind of what they needed to hear. And it was a live export cattle ship.
So you got a job on it?
No, it was free.
Right.
How it happened was the exporter had to have a rep on board. So I was appointed the rep, so the cargo of all the animals was signed over to my name.
It's usually a vet they need on board, though, isn't it?
Here it is. There, it's a what they call a stockman with experience.
And bearing in mind, right. So you were looking after the livestock, right? Where did it dock when it left? Where was it going?
Well, prior to that then, see, what I was doing to try and save money on the way, I was writing newspaper and magazine stories. So I thought, there's an interesting story here to follow the animals from rounding them up in the outback with helicopters. So I managed to get out there and travel by helicopter, rounding up the animals, bringing them in and onto the ship. And all I knew is that the boat was going first week somewhere in Asia. But as the day, then I was told Indonesia. But Indonesia's got 7,000 islands. So it was only on the day of departure I knew where the ship was going to.
Yeah.
And, hopped on the ship. An old ship. She was built in 1961. Not very modern. And headed across some of the Indian Ocean through Lombok straight into the Java Sea.
Very smelly, and, I would think. Was it a smelly trip?
No. No, not at all. Not very... Well, you see, the animals were well looked after. Because they were worth money. And the crew took pride in what they were doing. So into the Java Sea, and then the captain told me, because I was the only white person on the ship. Everybody else, there was 32 people on the ship. Everybody else was from Philippines.
Right, yeah.
And every meal I dined with the captain and chief engineer and first officer, so I was well looked after on there. And then into the Java Sea, and the captain said, we have to be careful because of pirates.
Oh, here we go.
I started laughing because I didn't believe it. I'd never heard it. I thought there was something from...
What do the pirates want to rob? The cows, is it? The cattle?
No, it was money. And I was shown, again, it was pre-internet times, I was shown telex reports from the Maritime Museum or Maritime Institute in Singapore. And yeah, it was all very real.
And what was their instruction if pirates came upon them in another boat, I suppose? Or is it like a rib, or how do they come upon?
I didn't go into too much detail, but it's give them what they wanted. And it was cash, because all the ships carried cash. So there was no dramas.
You didn't meet any pirates?
No, there was none of that. And then into the anchorage, we had to wait there for a place of birth in Jakarta, in Java. And lots of things in these countries would often work with a little bit of sweetener to make things happen. So I had to bribe my way into the country. So the immigration guys, I can't remember how much money I had to give them to get my visa stamped, to be allowed into Indonesia.
Did you stay there then, or would you just keep moving?
Well, I'd never before been to Asia. It was a huge culture shock. When the ship came in, I didn't know where to go. It was kind of poor around the docks in Jakarta. So there was only one thing to do, was hop into a truck with a load of cattle and go to wherever they were going. So I was well looked after by nice people there for a few days. And then I started heading for home. So at least I was in Asia now.
Yeah.
That was a huge relief.
Yeah, yeah.
And I travelled to Jakarta and then up into Sumatra. And it was fairly tough travelling. I wasn't seeing many white people at all. And in southern Sumatra, for instance, I arrived in a bus into one town, and the cops must have been aware I was on the bus. They took me straight to the station. So I spent 8 hours in the cop station there.
Why?
For my own safety.
Really? You could be a target. You could be robbed, is it?
There must have been something that I wasn't aware of.
Okay.
And into a restaurant, I had one sitting each side of me and one at the door. They were just minding me. Now, they did bring their families along to have their photographed with me and all this kind of stuff while I was there. So it was a novelty for them as well.
So did you do like Vietnam, Cambodia, places like that?
Yep. Up through Sumatra then, and up to the equator, met a Scottish girl at the equator, which is the first Western I'd seen in a while, got talking, said I was heading for Thailand, she was heading for Thailand. The only means, we had no real means of communication travelling, so we chose a point on the map, 1 month away, and said, I'll see you there at 12 o'clock in 1 month's time. So that was a challenge for her to get there in 1 month. She flew, and I went overland, and from Sumatra, then I follow the river down through the jungle into the Bintan Islands off Singapore, into Singapore, up through Malaysia and into Thailand, and headed for this little island and met the Scottish girl there.
On buses, was it?
Buses, ferries and trains.
And what little island then in Thailand?
Oh God, I can't remember. Okay. Was it Koh Phangan or something?
Oh, I know. And did you stay there for a while then?
Yeah, we stayed there for a week or two, I think. And then we decided we'd travel together. So we spent 3 weeks working our way up to Bangkok. And
any old bit of romance, then, no?
I can't be telling you stories like
okay,
that, Neil.
Okay.
People might hear about things like that, and I'd be in trouble.
Young, free and single, we'd say no more than that. So where after that?
And then Bangkok. I was that's where the crucial point came. The most direct way to come would be through Burma, Bangladesh, India and home. The only other option was to go through Laos and Vietnam. But Laos at the time was very dangerous and not many borders open. But there was one mountain board pass open. Bearing in mind, now research was hard to do because I only had books to read with no internet.
Yeah.
And I was trying to organize visas in advance as well for other countries, especially Russia. So this, like, I applied for it in Bangkok. The forms were sent to meet me in Vietnam. I was using a poste restante, if you're aware of it. Mail would be held at a GPO in a certain capital city.
Yeah. Why would you need to go to Russia? That's turning right instead of left, isn't it?
Yes, that's the problem. It was the only route I could find with open borders.
And did you get across into Russia?
Oh, I did, yeah.
Okay.
So I was heading from Thailand. Then I ended up working in Laos, even though I was really afraid to go there. I ended up working, running a bulldozer project in the jungles in Laos, which was fascinating. Very dangerous. I had an armed guard with me the whole time when I was there, but it boosted my finances to keep traveling. And then traveled down into Vietnam. And as soon as I crossed the border, I got stoned, people throwing stones at me. When I arrived into Vietnam, because I thought I was Russian, I'd hired the guy on a motorbike to take me away. Then down through Vietnam, down to the coast, followed the coast up through Vietnam, and then headed for southern China. I was only using local buses and trains because they were more interesting. And then southern China, went to Hong Kong to organize paperwork and visas and pay for things in advance. Then up to Beijing. And hopped on the Trans-Siberian train in Beijing. I got on it at 9 o'clock on a Saturday night, and I didn't get off that train until 8 o'clock the following Friday night.
Wow, nearly a week. And was it comfortable, the Trans-Siberian?
Yes, it was grand. I wasn't going playing first class or anything. I was doing the cheapest way I can. I remember the ticket cost $220 at the time.
And you just get a Pullman seat, like you're literally sitting all day and night.
No, you could lie down. Each compartment was about 6 feet by 6 feet, and there was 4 people in there for the week.
Did you get along with them?
Oh, you have to. Travel teaches tolerance.
You have no chance. Were the folks back home wondering where you were or hoping you were safe throughout all this?
Sure, they had no clue where I was. It was difficult to communicate. So that's why I had to be very careful, because nobody knew what country I was in lots of the time.
All right, so where did the Trans-Siberian take you to?
They dropped me in Moscow. So then I stayed in Moscow for a week, because I was taking lots of photographs of the journeys.
Fabulous city, I'd imagine.
Oh, beautiful, especially at night. Even though at night I was doing photographs, but I would have to... No, I wasn't dressing flashy anyway. I'd have to dress fairly destitute looking, except like I might have €1,000 worth of camera gear in an old Russian supermarket bag on and off the subways and that, so I wouldn't get robbed. And then from there, it was through Belarus into Poland. And from Poland then, I went up to Denmark, because I'd fell in love in China with a girl from Denmark, and then up to Denmark and down the west coast of Europe.
Oh, did you get to Germany, Denmark, Holland, and knock on her door or something? Is it?
Actually, I'd sent a letter again. Well, how did it work? I'd posted a letter from Beijing to Denmark, and I gave my return address as the GPO, Warsaw, Poland. So when I got to Poland, she wrote to me. She written a letter to me there.
And did she answer the door when you arrived?
Oh, God, yes. Yeah, even that was more than 20 years ago. We're still in touch, you know. She visited Ireland last 2 years ago and things like
Amazing.
That.
Amazing. And then from Denmark across the rest of Europe and home, is it?
Yeah, that's it. But one thing interesting, though, it was 1997. I met somebody else, a CNN reporter we travel a little bit in China with. And we were swapping addresses, you know, so we'd send the card or whatever. And she gave me this thing called an email address, which I'd never heard of. So that was just the start of the internet coming into travelling.
Yeah.
And that was the trip.
And would you? And that was the '90s. I mean, do you have any thoughts as to whether it would be achievable now? With you're in different countries. Like Russia is obviously a no go. Moscow's a no go. China, I'm not imagining that's probably okay. But would it be safe to do something like that now?
It's a very difficult question. Yeah, because borders open and close. The good thing about nowadays is you have your more access to information about what's happening.
Mm.
I was traveling very, very blind, using information that was years out of date.
Yeah. What did you do then with what have you done since 97 then with the rest of your life? Have you continued to travel or just settled down and get sense?
I worked in England. I worked in several other countries. I've settled down now with kids. But the travel changes you. Them kind of long journeys change you. You just have a different perspective in life.
How?
How you see the importance of things like compassion, how lucky we are here. Well, me personally, how lucky we are. Like, you see some horrible poverty in other countries, things like this.
But aren't we seeing more and more of that now, much more disenfranchised people, much more forgotten
we're
people?
Yeah, we are, unfortunately. I'm often in the city early in the morning and take a walk around Cork City at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning, and you see unfortunate people there. But having said that, yeah, Ireland is changing, but everywhere in the world is changing. Like, I have good memories of, say, Vietnam 25 years ago or whatever. It's a different country now.
Mm-hmm.
It's more modernised, so it's very difficult to know what it would be like now. I would not do the same trip again.
That's what I'm asking. Memories you wouldn't do it now. You wouldn't feel as safe as you did in the 90s.
I don't know about safe, because it's a very... I couldn't answer the question. I just don't know.
Mm.
The sense of adventure that was there then is not there now, I think. Because you could go onto Google Street View now and check out what, I don't know, some street in Calcutta looks like.
Mm.
Whereas, say, Calcutta, you have no idea what's facing you.
You really are flying blind, yeah.
Oh, yes, but that was part of the adventure. Now you can book a room in advance. You couldn't do that before. You turn up at 9 o'clock at night in some foreign city, hoping you'll find somewhere to stay.
Amazing, amazing experience, though, I would think. And, you know, like, would you recommend that everybody should do it when they're young?
I think so.
Nice one.
I think it's a good, like, you can learn at school and all that, but will the outside world educate you in a different way?
Do it young, you know, before life takes over.
Exactly. And often, see, I had more time and less money than most people. So I was traveling at a different level than lots of people would travel now.
Yeah.
Like, you had a very interesting man on the other day on a bicycle around India.
Yeah.
And his experiences and people like that, they're fascinating because they're seeing the world at ground level.
The Irish are great for travel, though, aren't they? Really like that.
Yes. Yes,
like you'll find Irish people in the four corners of the world.
I was surprised, though, in some of the offbeat places of the world, I didn't find anybody, not to mind Irish.
Mm.
There's times I've gone for a week or more, and it's a difficult thing to do. If you travel for a week of continuous moving and don't see any white people, you wonder, why? Mm. Is there something wrong?
Mm.
And like even in places like India, which would have lots of people, I've often travelled a week at a time and find nobody there.
Yeah, but that was 30 years ago, PJ. You know, I mean, communication and, you know, accessibility is just on a different level, I suppose.
It is. It's probably easier now, and you can stay in touch better.
Well, without
with
a doubt.
People, you know.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Whereas I was very safety conscious. Like, I had certain rules I set for myself in the interest of self-preservation, because now you can email, you can stay in touch easy. No, I couldn't.
Mm. Mm.
I remember when I was working in Laos, the only way with communication was 7-hour drive to the capital.
Picking up that's your mail in a local post office, yeah. Waiting weeks for a return letter.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter. Time, you look at time differently. I remember I had to wait 10 days somewhere for a visa once.
Yeah, I know.
That's okay.
Yeah.
But the world is different. It done me good anyway, that's the main thing.
Great story. Thanks for sharing it, pal. Thanks for listening. Appreciate it. I'm amazed at the amount of tales we've had like yours over the past few days. That's PJ Cotters. Monday Munchie shout-outs, lads, for Luso Cork. Morning to everybody at Crazy Monkey Skate and e-scooter repair shop in Douglas. Simo Tech in Carrigaline. Hope I'm pronouncing that right, lads. The Brothers of Charity. Morning to Anya. To everybody at Rockwell Engineering in Cloheen. Carrick Tool Pharmacy are listening. They have a big gang who love cake. Euro Car Parts in Sarsfield Road in Wilton. Siva Logistics in Little Island, the CSO office preparing all of the statistics, and they love cake. ML Scaffolding are working in the Glen at the moment. Rycal.ie in Kanturk. DEITG in Blackpool love coffee cake. Charlie, who works there, is a new dad and he could do with a sugar hit. All those sleepless nights, I suppose. Drina Central Hardware are listening this morning. Caremark Cork in on the Tramore Road. Systems and Goods teams at Musgrave on the Tramore Road as well. Pampered Paws in Middleton. Supply IT in Little Island. And the accommodation centre on the Kinsale Road roundabout. Some working there and they could do with a treat. 9 months pregnant, says Barbara, and ready to pop. I'd love this for my co-workers and I. The big coffee cake from Luso. And one final one. My son is leaving me tomorrow. He's moving to Australia. We would love the cake for his celebration tonight. I'm not at work, but at home with 5 kids, which is even harder work, says Lindsay in Churchfield. So keep those shout-outs coming for your chance to win the Monday Munchies today. Text who you are and where you are to 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
I think over a million a month now looking after Ukrainian pets. This would be cats and dogs. And at the same time, of course, talking about people who are suffering with the awfully horrific disease and disorder of anorexia nervosa this morning, and of course a freeze within the HSE. Can I make sure that I've got this right, says Dave. Ireland is flooded with all of the immigrants living in the UK getting slept with deportation orders to Rwanda, and they're now coming in via Northern Ireland, totally unaccounted for, on top of all those who have been arriving by plane as it is. God help us all. Well, I suppose if you're asking a question, is what you're saying correct? You are correct. And Richie picks up then on the state of Irish politics. I mean, you often have to wonder about politicians or those that are running the country or ministerial portfolios, a lot of the time with absolutely no experience as such for their brief. I mean, you wouldn't want somebody, you know, like me, a broadcaster, performing open heart surgery on you, would you? You would like a fully trained person with a medical background in surgery to do that. But a lot of the time our politicians have actually no experience or real world experience of running a Department of Health or running a Department of Justice or running any kind of government department. Might answer your question, Richie. He says, the state of Irish politics can be summed up by the following. I assume we can all agree that Irish healthcare is in crisis and has been for many years. Yes? Yes. Well, Neil, Simon Harris, Leo Varadkar and Micheál Martin were all ministers for health and yet have risen to the top job as Taoiseach. We must therefore concede that there is no accountability in Irish politics when we actually reward these failures and others who continually fail upwards. I fail upwards. That's a good term. I like that. If it weren't so serious. But even watching the primetime show from last week, the minister was on, Minister Butler, you couldn't help but feel that she came across as kind of like lost, as in lost in the scale of the crisis within health. And on her watch, of course, intervention for those suffering from eating disorders. Text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. It's disgraceful, and I don't care what I'm called. I would have a problem with all of the international protection orders coming into my housing estate because, let's be honest, most of them are fake UGs who are allowed in by this gullible government. And that's picking up on the fact that 80% of the international protection orders are coming in now through Northern Ireland, because they know that in the UK, that if they're processed and are to be deported, it won't be self-deportation, they will be flown to Rwanda. No wonder we're inundated with international protection applicants. I just read the info page for them from the Irish Refugee Council. Could you please find out who was funding the Irish Refugee Council? Well, it's a leading member of the Irish Refugee and Migrant Coalition, a coalition of Irish NGOs, non-government organisations, organisations. And they also are in the coalition along with Oxfam, Trocara, Amnesty International, Amnesty Ireland. And they're funded by the St. Stephen's Green Trust, which in itself is a registered charity. I believe the vast majority of people making money from this accommodation of asylum seekers are connected to the main government parties. Those same parties know they'll never have full control over the country's finances again. So therefore, they are now pulling in as much of the public taxes for themselves before they get the boot. It's corruption bordering on treason in my books, says Bobby. And just two more. Now do you see why people are protesting outside O'Gorman's house? He's destroying our small Ireland by filling it. He shouldn't be in government, same as Simon Harris, who was elected on the 15th count. And the last one. The biggest issue for Irish people now is immigration. Why are you not playing the audio of Michael McNamara dismantling Helen McEntee? Her incompetence was astonishing. Well, I did play that. I played it last week. I don't have an opportunity to play it again. The government has made a laughing stock of our country. We're seen as such a soft touch now. In my own life, they've destroyed y'all. 80% of all tourist beds have been given to Ukrainians, and now they are sending hundreds of asylum seekers here as well. Can't talk as I'm at work, but I am absolutely livid. And I suppose there's going to be a big, big problem with regards to the tourism industry across the summer because of the limitations of beds, whether it's hotels or Airbnbs or holiday homes or guest houses. So text 0868 104 106. Meanwhile, right across the week, in association with the Metropole Hotel, we have some wonderful overnights for you and whomever you choose to take with you. So you get a lovely overnight in the Met with dinner for two of you in the Met bar and restaurant. Beautiful, delicious breakfast the next morning in the Riverview restaurant. You'll have breakfast overlooking the River Lee and the beautiful city outside the window. So the Met restaurant will feed you breakfast as well, and an overnight in the Metropole Hotel. So I've been asking the question as to where you met, as in Metropole, where you met your loved one or your partner. Some great texts on that, but calls are always better. Bronwyn, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Thank you for holding. So where and how did it happen for you?
Well, I think where is somewhere in the Pacific Ocean, and we were working on a cruise ship together, and that's how it all started.
All right. And what was the ship? Yeah. What was the ship?
We met on Celebrity Millennium. She's part of Celebrity Cruises. I don't know if anybody here has been with Celebrity.
I know the group you're talking about. I know the company you're referring to. So what were you doing on board?
I was dancing. I was a performer, and my husband was an officer at the time. So I was performing, I was doing my job, and he was sitting because he wasn't working at the moment. And we made eye contact, and that was that.
What kind of dancing would that be? That was obviously the shows that we put on at night, yeah?
Yeah. So I was in a variety show. I think that night it was a boogie wonderland show. So it was like Disco Fever, you know, roller hands, all the groovy moves. It was so much fun.
And you had time during your very busy routine to lock eyes with this guy in uniform, is it? Was it the uniform you were interested in?
I think it was. But then I found out he was Irish, and so that's what kept me here.
Okay, so in the middle of the Caribbean, while dancing on the stage, he was part of the crew as well, officer, up on the bridge kind of thing?
Yes, up on the bridge, yeah. He helped drive the ship.
Okay. So what happened next? I mean, how long is the cruise? How long are you on duty at sea?
So I think his contracts would be about 3 or 4 months. Mine were about 6 to 8. So we became really good friends. He, like a lot of my castmates, were from England or Australia. So he got along really well with everybody, and he kind of came into our friend group, and we went to dinners together. We'd spend time with all of our friends together. And then I was leaving the ship in Singapore, and he was staying on board for another few months because his contract hadn't finished yet. And we kind of decided, oh, we'll keep in touch. And he invited me to come visit Ireland. So I came in like March of 2017. And
unannounced?
No, planned it. And I came to visit him, met all of his friends, met his family. And I decided, yeah, I think I could live here. So I moved here in 2020, and that's when we got engaged. And then we got married last year.
Oh, my God. Did you give up your life on the sea then and everything?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I went back to school, and I'm a nutritionist now. But he still works at sea. So he's away at the moment. He's back this weekend.
Is he gone for long stretches?
He's gone for 10 weeks at a time.
We should really give him a name, shouldn't we, really, Bronwyn?
His name's Kieran.
And why? I mean, it's a great story. I love it. But I'm very curious about what life is like on a 6 or 8 month cruise around the world. Is it as joyous as it sounds, or is it hard work?
It's a mix of both. You get to see places of the world, like corners of the world you never thought you'd see in your entire life. But at the same time, especially like if we have longer crossing cruises where you're spending like 8 to 9 days at sea for a guest, that's like magical because you have your lovely room with your balcony and your all-you-can-eat buffet all the time.
Yeah, all the activities.
Crew members don't get any of that. So the crossing, the longer cruises can be really hard. But to be honest, getting to see the world and get paid to do something that you really enjoy doing, nothing compares to it. It's an experience I would wish on everybody.
Okay, so I wish I had more time, but just on, say, if it's something you would wish on everybody, do you have to train up for it? Like, you just can't apply. I mean, what kind of credentials or training do you have to get a job like that? I mean, you got to be able to dance.
Yeah, exactly. As a performer, you have to be able to dance or sing. But like, say for Kieran, he went to Maritime College and he has a degree in nautical science. But you know, you could be a bartender, you could be a hairdresser. So the credentials kind of vary. Like, they need everything on board. Yeah. You need electricians and engineers and all of that.
So if you can hack being away for so long and you have a bit of wanderlust to see the world, you're literally being paid to see the world. And the tips would be good too, right?
Exactly. Tips would be amazing, especially as a bartender or like guest relations. You're doing really well. If you have a smile on your face, you're doing really well.
That's big scale stuff. Do you watch that television series at all, Below Deck at all, I wonder?
Yes, I do. So that's very different. Their ships are much smaller. And the antics they get up to are insane.
No, you guys were well behaved, I'm sure.
We tried our best.
And how have you adjusted to Ireland? Do you enjoy it here?
I do enjoy it here. I miss my family, of course, but I do enjoy living here. Everybody's really nice. I have yet to have a bad experience with people here. The weather, different story.
It doesn't take long before we get around to the Irish weather, I'm afraid.
I know.
Oh, listen, that's a great story. That's going to be hard to beat between now and midday, but thank you for sharing. Regards to you, Bronwyn. Thanks for taking the call.
Thank you for having me.
Have a good one. Overnight stay in the Met, lads. And we need to know where you met your partner, where you met your loved one. Bronwyn and Kieran's story is a good one. Can you beat that? Text 0868104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation. Text 0868104106. On the horrific disorder that is anorexia, I have young daughters myself, Neil. I feel the show is like Keeping Up with the Kardashians and the like aren't doing them any good at all. It's all about image now and nothing more than BS. Love the show, says John. Yes, social media, television, YouTube, access to information and watching the lives of others, all too often the rich and famous, can be quite detrimental to a growing mind. Here we are again. Money we pay every week and PRSI paid wasted on what? Not on the patients, that's for sure, Neil. Where is the health minister in all of this? Hiding in some office somewhere. Same office that the president is hiding, maybe. We haven't heard from him for a while. They're all just busy counting their exorbitant salaries, no doubt. Actually, if you're thinking about perhaps what the president earns, it's €332,000 each year. He ranks as Europe's second highest head of state. The only person that earns more is the Swiss president, who earns €545,000 a year. The Irish president, €332,070, Europe's second highest head of state. And then on those that struggle or have children struggling with eating disorders, my daughter had thoughts of ending her life. She's in her mid-teens. Thankfully, we are very close, and she came and she talked to me. I brought her to our GP and we were referred to CAMHS, the Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services team in the CUH. They ultimately referred us to a health charity for help. And they told my daughter to watch some self-help videos before the appointment. When we were seen by a counsellor, they asked my daughter what she wanted or expected from the service. I thought this was an appalling thing to ask a teenager struggling with their mental health. She needed to talk to someone. My child needs someone besides me to open up to and someone who can guide her professionally with life skills in this area. Now I have to seek counselling privately for her. Every day I'm worried sick when my child heads out to school or goes out with their friends. It's so frustrating thinking that these online videos are the way forward, as they stated to us that this new approach has cut down on their waiting lists. It has cut down the list, all right, as people don't want a service like this. Shame on the people who came up with this idea. It is not a professional service. No wonder our poor young are suffering. And this is from a mother who feels that watching videos is the way forward, that they say it cuts down on the list of people on waiting for a service. But is it actually helping any of those? I can't imagine that it would be to watch a video. The psychiatric services for children and young adults is so lacking in Ireland. Social media, I believe, has a lot to answer for many of these problems, says Mary. So thank you for those. Keep them coming. Text 0868104106. I was talking about, there's a story out this morning saying that if pubs don't put up the price list of their beverages inside in the pub, they're going to be fined €3,000. Somebody said the reason they don't is because there's an ever-growing habit now of pubs increasing the price of drink as the night goes on, just edging them up slowly but surely. But there's a lovely text with regards to great value, and Dan Lowry's on McCurtain Street. I was there recently, 2 pints of Murphy's, 2 pints of Beamish, a pint of Coors, a Coke, non-alcoholic bottle of cider, €37.50. Considering it's on one of the city's best streets for food and drink, I thought it was great value. You wouldn't be getting the equivalent of that in Dublin anytime soon, for sure. So keep them coming. Text 0868104106. During my conversation earlier on this morning with PJ and different people, I was talking about the track that he did, and he went into Russia, and I said that it's a bit of a no-go area, obviously. Richie says, why is Russia a no-go area? You can fly there, Dublin-Moscow, flights from €735. I'm not disputing that it's not open. I'm just saying I'm not so sure I'd want to be in any way, shape or form contributing to the Russian economy right now. That's the only reason. It's not as if I wouldn't feel safe there. It's somewhere that I would love to go. But maybe when circumstances were better and everybody was kind of getting along a little bit better, I kind of understand to some extent why Russia's feeling a bit touchy-feely. You know, Finland and Sweden are in NATO. So they've got, you know, NATO moving ever closer. And then Russians must feel as if they've been kind of boxed in, don't you think? And with Ukraine coming into the European Union, I think they also have a worry that they could have nuclear arms on their doorstep. They've got Finland on one side, Ukraine on the other, and they're completely and utterly boxed in. The downside to feeling boxed in, though, is will Russia or will Putin stop? I mean, Putin wants Ukraine, doesn't he? I mean, it's not as if he's going to say, okay, we lost that, let's go home. And some wouldn't be surprised if he moved on to other Eastern European countries after Ukraine. So, for those reasons, Russia's not on my list of places to go to. Not anytime soon, anyway. Text 0868104106. Is that a call there? Do you want me to do this? Because I can take an ad break. Take an ad break back after these.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
And it's Monday, so it's got to be the Monday Munchies, courtesy of ourselves and Luso Balancolig. Carol Barry and Ian Kerrigan creating custom artisan treats, always handmade, and they're absolutely delicious. You can see all the creations online, lusocork.ie. So we've got a double layered coffee sponge to give away. So we need to know who you are and where you're working, and the Red Patrollers will deliver it in time for a slice of cake and a cup of tea or coffee. So text or WhatsApp who you are and where you're working, 0868104106, and we will organise a draw just before midday. You know, not everybody could sit down with a slice of cake and have a cup of tea or coffee. Certainly not if you live on North Side, on different areas of the North Side of Cork. There's a day goes by, to be honest with you, that I don't get a photograph or a comment or a text from somebody who's living with appalling water. Like water that's the colour, no idea what it tastes like, but it's the colour of mud. And Pat has sent me one this morning, and I just wanted to jump back into this topic, to be honest with you, because this is a photograph, Pat. Pat, good morning.
That's right.
And you have a filter on your tap. So
That is correct, Neil. That is what's coming out of the taps now, boy. It started Saturday. It's like having oil from a chip pan, or if you dip a tea bag in water, that's the colour of it.
It's greasy, oily, brown. What colour would be if you didn't have a filter?
I would say, Neil, it probably would be close to black.
So what do you do for a cup of tea or brushing your teeth? Things with a shower, stuff like that?
Bottles of water and you go to the pool.
So imagine somebody that's brought home a newborn baby from the CUMH, for instance.
Yes. There you go. What's their issue? Well, I'm not, you make a cup of tea, Neil. You need the kettle from the kettle. And
totally, I take it for granted.
So do I. And here we have now in 2024. I know they're flushing in the air. They're flushing at night time, but I've never in my life seen it like this, Neil.
I've spoken to people on the air and they've had water that colour for 2 years.
Ah, yes, but I mean, what I'm saying, Neil, I have seen it in the area, in our own home, but I've never seen it this dirty.
Yeah, I know.
Never seen it this dirty.
They say they're trying to upgrade the very old water pipe network and things like that, and that's...
Right.
You know,
how long does that take?
I have no idea, man. I have no idea.
What about the Minister for Letters? Does he have any... What about environment and this and that? That's water you probably get in parts of Asia. And that's no disrespect to those people out there. It's filthy. Absolutely. There's no smell from it, but it's filthy with the dirt.
Yeah, I know. It's chronic.
Can you imagine having those lovely cakes and buns this morning? Would you like iced tea or black tea? Or orange tea?
So, if you let it run, does it clear of it?
I did it for 7 minutes and I sent you on a live video after 7 minutes.
No, I haven't seen the video, so tell me.
It's exactly the same colour what's in the cup.
I don't mean to make light of this, but if I might give away the Metropolo Hotel prize tomorrow for the dirtiest water coming from a tap. I know it's not something we should be laughing about, but...
No, we shouldn't, Neil. It's not funny, Neil, because, we are paying our taxes, everything else. We're paying extra taxes than when we buy water.
Imagine the amount of money that people are spending on water.
Yeah, well, we buy water, even though we have filter, but we do buy some water. But now I buy the 5 litre because I'm not paying the 15 and 25 cents that they've imposed on people. If you buy a 5 litre of water, there is no charge on that.
Because it doesn't fit in the machine.
Well, don't worry, they'll find machines for that next day, you know. But I mean, this is crazy. I mean, I read it was a report. There is what they sold in February. They sold over 28 million euros worth of products, and only 1.2 was brought back. So there you are. There's the water tax put in the side door.
Why do you think so few people are actually going to the vending machines?
Because, Neil, we have our recycling, we have our compost, we have our glass, we have our rubbish. We're paying for it. Again, another double taxation.
Like, what was wrong? In our case, it's a blue bin. What was wrong with the blue bin? Recycling responsibly and all of it then going to a recycling centre where it's made into new little bottles of plastic and, you know, whatever
Nothing
the case may
wrong
be.
With it, Neil. It's
making
another
garden furniture and stuff like that.
Yeah, I see 3 kids 2 weeks ago in a basketball tournament. They collected 68 euros in bottles. Fair play to them. 68 euros in bottles. Fair play to the kids. We did it when we were young with the glass bottles, Neil.
Oh, totally, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's probably the only upside to it is the kids can get pocket money out of it, I get you. Yeah.
I worked in the health board. I just love working in the health board. Go down to the shop and say they are. You might get £2 or £3. A lot of money then, Neil. we respect the things then. You know, you're on there about topics every day and, we talk about the indices and what's going on there. This is 2024. I'm not a young man in the fit, man. And, you know, but I mean, come on, lads. Can we not just unite for once?
Okay, well, talking about united, are people feeling, disconnected, if you like, disenfranchised? Mm-hmm. Would this be tolerated if it was the colour of the water on the south side, Pat O'Neill?
Well, now, Neil, you're putting me in the spot there. The colour of the water in the north, south, east or west should be the same in all four areas.
Okay, good diplomatic answer. Thank you for that.
And listen to me, if any tickets for the water boys for me?
I'm quite sure that I have as to whether I'm going to impart them for you. I'm not quite sure. I haven't made my mind up.
That's okay.
I'll consider your application.
And you might talk to your colleague as well, Rory, in the sport department. He had a great laugh out of Liverpool Thursday morning. I thought, actually, it was like Mick Mulcahy's, what's his name, going back.
Yeah, they love it, yeah, when things don't go right. Okay. Yeah, they love turning
people
up.
People in glass houses can't throw stones in, is that right, boys?
Not this time, but there'll be another chance,
He'll keep me in mind, but I love the show.
All right, cheers, Pat. But as they say, a dumb priest never got a parish, I suppose. Anyway, let's see if Frank piped up. He's up in Blarney Street. Frank, good morning.
Morning, Neil, how are you?
I'm good. I've got overnights in the mess, as in the metropole.
A cup of clean tea.
You'll get lovely tea and coffee there. You'll get the most beautiful food. So we, absolutely. Oh, totally. Oh, you're talking about
clean
the metropole hotel.
Right.
Yeah. Overnight stay.
Oh,
you also got a problem with the watercolour, do you?
The whole north side has a problem for the last 2 years, Neil.
So there's nowhere now at this stage that isn't affected.
No, okay. And I mean, you were taught as a young fella, you never flush by night. And that's what they're doing. They're flushing by night, so in the morning, everything is dirty for hours.
Well, why were we taught as young fellas not to flush by night?
Because you woke up the whole house. Unless it was a number two now, obviously.
Oh, God, that's all I need in the Monday morning. I want to be talking about delicious cake. And beautiful cups of tea.
Well, we'll talk about the mess.
Well, hang on a second. Wait a second. Do you think? No, I'm being serious. Do you think if it was the, because it's not an issue on the south side. If it was, would it be tolerated?
No, but where the problem comes, I'd imagine, is the hills. Because you imagine if it starts up, we'll say at the reservoir, while it's collecting on the way down, so by the time it gets to the North Gate Bridge, it's slammed.
I don't know the technicalities of it, but if it's been going on for over 2 years, and it has been, I think Seamus here, who works for me, they've been on a boil water notice for years down in East Cork. It's just staggering. I'll talk to Barbara in a second. Anyway, let's get back to the Metropole Hotel. I'm asking people where they met their loved one or partner, and the best story wins the prize for today. So what was it with you?
Well, Neil, it was Tuesday, October the 1st, 1984.
I met her on Tuesday.
And as you remember, Tuesday, October the 1st, had to be Dickie Day in the North Side. Because all the mammies got the children's allowance and they all headed to the pub.
They did. And I hope you've got good life. I hope you've got good life insurance, Frank.
I was lucky in that I was an 18-year-old stud, like, and I was playing with a band. Right. Out in Henry's Bar in Blackpool, sorry, caught the eye of this stunning 16-year-old.
So was it a case then that the first Tuesday in every month, the pubs would be putting on, live entertainment and free food and sausages and whatever you're having yourself for the young mothers?
Year's evening. Every month.
This year, New Year's Eve on Dickie Night.
I am not joking. If you didn't get a seat in that particular pub, no, Henry's Blackpool, if you didn't get a seat by 7:30, you weren't getting a seat. And
weren't they entitled to their first Tuesday out and they're working hard all month long? It's their money. Yes. It's none of our business.
It's an awful pity that it seems to have faded out over the years. Because all the top Irish stars would be in Cork on the first Tuesday of every month. You had Dickie.
Yeah.
You had Sonny Knowles.
You did. You had Joe Dolan play. That was a big night. Yeah. All of the show bands got a big gig on the first Tuesdays.
That's right. So we met anyway. And so
what was the 16-year-old doing inside the pub anyway on a Tuesday night?
I'm sure there were different days. We skipped the dummies into the points, like, for the babies, and don't get me started on grape water. I mean, grape, no wonder it's a country of alcoholics, like, we were all wearing grape water.
Is that still around? I remember the grape water as a kid, I had a fondness for it.
I believe it used to be available in the north, but I'd say it surely wasn't the same 70% alcohol.
It's kind of sweet alcohol, wasn't it?
I kind of don't remember now because I'm only a young fella.
I remember the shape of the bottle. I remember trying to reach up to it on the dresser.
I remember the colour of the bottle, then filling up a whole shopping trolley with them, kind of. But,
all right, so you're. Please tell me that you weren't a 30-something-year-old man. How old were you?
18.
Oh, that's fine. Okay, an 18-year-old chatting up a 16-year-old. That's fine. Okay, go on.
Stood in the band. I mean, so how could she refuse me, like? And 40 years later, she's still refusing me, like. But so we won't go there. And funnily enough, Neil, the year before, 83.
You're breaking up there.
Yeah, the year before in 83, I graduated from the AG in the Mon, and we had our grads in the Met.
When did you marry?
92.
Well, what happened on the night of the first Tuesday? Did you...
Oh, walked her home was afraid of my life to give her a kiss.
Yeah.
And she gave me one. And we arranged to meet the following night.
Did anybody tell you that she was a bit young, no?
God, no. Okay. I just think, sure, they were marrying at 11 and everything in those days. Like.
Okay. All right. Okay.
But thanks anyway, Nate. It'd be great to get back to reminisce.
So 40 years later, still happily married, still madly in love?
She is.
I really do hope you have good life insurance. Anyway, stay listening. We'll see how you get on. Text 0868104106. Thank you, Frank. We've got an overnight in the Metropole Hotel. The Met Bar and Restaurant is where we'll be having dinner. The early bird or the dinner menu, whichever you like. Beautiful seafood, great cheeses and meats and great desserts. So it's an overnight then and a beautiful breakfast the next morning in the Riverview Restaurant overlooking the Lee with a gorgeous night for you and whomever you choose to take with you. So keep those texts coming. Text 0868 104 106 and we'll get another few texts and calls on this side of midday. Back after the break.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868
104 106. The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Okay, you got about 5 minutes now to get your texts in for the Monday Munchies, courtesy of ourselves and Luso Cork, and a delicious double layer coffee sponge will be delivered to you in the workplace. Text who you are and where you are to 0868 104 106. Barbara, I'll talk to you in 1 second. Same with you, Marie. Don't go anywhere. Happy Monday to all of the staff of the Menopause Hub in Ballon Colleague, to Magic Vacations in Kinsale who are listening. They won a big award, Kinsale Based Specialist Travel, named Ireland Travel Agent of the Year and the Top 50 Travel Agency Awards. Take a bow. Morning to everybody at Suite 24 in the Cork Clinic, to all at OSP Hips in Stryker. Morning to John Joe and all of the gang. We can have your cake and eat it. I like that. Murray Properties, work better after sugar, they say. I love it. Thank you, Katrina. To everybody at the finishing department in Alcon who are listening this morning, Peach Vintage Clothing. If they win the Monday Munchies, they'll share with the new neighbours on the main street in Middleton. Everybody who is listening at EMH Technical Services would love the Monday Munchies for the hard-working electricians. And a final one with a big shout-out to Nullag, a granny to one-year-old Molly, and babysitting today in Ballincollig while her parents go to work. I would love some cake. I love minding her, but it's a big responsibility. It is. It's a big cake as well. There'd be a lot of eating in it for one person, but good morning to you all the same. So one last opportunity now to get your texts in for our Monday Munchies. Text who you are and where you are to 0868 104 106. Let me get back to the phone lines. Barbara, thanks for holding. Good morning.
Good morning.
I was talking earlier on about water, the colour of mud. Yours is the colour of...
Chocolate.
Like a dark chocolate.
A dark, dusty, with grit inside in the water.
As in, whatever's in the pipes isn't just water, it's grit.
No, it's grit.
It's mud, it's particles and of metal.
Some mornings, Neil, when you make a cup of tea, I don't take milk, and you see a slime up on top of the cup.
Yeah, slimy, oily, dirty water. How long have you had that?
2 years now, Nick.
2 years?
Yeah, 2 years now we're going on. I'm not the only one. Linda Vanek is from Valley Drive and Mosa up Fair Hill.
And do you buy a lot of bottled water then or what, Barbara?
Yeah, my granddaughter has to bring it down to me.
Like, have you any idea how much of it you're going through a week and at what cost?
You go through both 5 bottles if you're staying at home all day.
5 bottles?
Not 5 bottles, not a day, no, about 5 to 6 a week. The big bottles.
Like 2 litre, big, huge ones.
Yeah. Because you got the wash of age, you got the wash the meat out if you're doing stews.
I know. But what if you want to have a shower or brush your teeth or wash your hair?
Don't talk about that, Neil. Don't talk about that. Because the taps in the bathroom are the same, the shower, the toilet.
And does it improve if you let them run for a period of time or anything like that?
I tell you now, Neil, I went out Saturday morning at 9 o'clock and left my taps run to do my shopping in Blackpool. I came home at 11:15 and I still had dirty water.
So what are
it
they
was
doing?
So bad now, that when you ring them, you're put on hold and then you're cut off.
Well, what are they doing for 2 years? Like how long does
nothing
it take?
But it's tough. And
how
then
do you,
when
how
the
do you,
water
how do you,
run,
how do you wash clothes? Like
you have to be careful. I had beautiful white neck curtains that I took down and put in there 3 weeks ago, and they came out kind of a dark browny colour.
They went in white, came out the colour of coffee.
Yeah, dirty, filthy. You have to be careful putting mites in.
I know, it's not acceptable. This goes on and it's on and on for an indeterminate
amount
of time.
When you ring the waterproof, they tell you you'll be on hold. You're put on hold and no one comes back to you. And that's going on all the time, Lee.
Well, I have to say, people must have the patience of a saint to put up with it as long as they have.
Well, sure, I went to the corporation 5 weeks ago about it, and they told me it had nothing to do with them.
Yeah, of course it doesn't.
It's the
but like, imagine.
Irish water.
Imagine if you had small children or if you had gastro problems or anything like that. You know?
That's right. Neil, I take my eldest grandson, he's a special needs.
Yeah.
I take him at weekends on my daughter and the husband can have a break.
You're very good, Barbara.
And you have to watch the shower then because he don't know no different.
I know.
Like he's 31 years of age, but he don't know different.
People are sending me photographs now of their shower trays stained, their sinks stained.
Oh, yeah.
Brown.
You got to bleach your shower every day. You have to bleach it and then you're running the water then to make sure there's no bleach on the shower tray because it could be dangerous for your skin, right?
Oh, no. Listen, bleach is a bad news, particularly if it's undiluted bleach. You want to be careful with that. I don't know. I just don't know how people are being so patient and it's going on for as long as it is. Barbara, thank you so much. Do you mind if I talk to Marie? Because she's south of the river, out around Toker Way, I think. Is that right, Marie?
That's right, yep.
Okay,
yep.
So it's not anything exclusive to the north side then?
No, not as bad, no.
Not as bad, but it's like, it's not the colour of what? No, you wouldn't drink it.
No. Anyway, Neil.
I'll talk to your husband about your husband in a second, but are you buying vast quantities of bottled water as well?
Oh yeah.
Are you just used to that now, are you? You're just used to buying it?
Oh yeah. Even if the water is clear on the tap, I still wouldn't drink it. No.
So you don't trust the water?
I don't trust it. No. I put washing in last week now, like the other lady, and my blouse came out. It was white. It came out brown.
Great way if you want to dye clothes, but not for anything else, though.
Oh, God. Oh, it's horrible.
Anyway. Okay. Well, have you had anybody calling for the local government, the local elections? Any councillors?
No. The three have just thrown them in the letterbox.
No one knocked. Yeah, because I've been getting... Now, I know that I missed one or two that they did actually call. But I know Paddy Deneen called, I missed him. But are they putting in notes saying, sorry, you weren't here, I missed you?
No. They're just throwing in the leaflet, vote for such a one.
Yeah.
I had three of them out, yeah.
And they're not knocking or ringing the bell or anything?
No.
Okay.
No, I haven't met anyone. May okay. God help them if they come
That's
to the door.
That's the thing, you see. I'm wondering why they're not ringing on the bell. Anyway, I know. Listen, I've got some lovely prizes this week for the Metropole Hotel. You didn't get married there, did you?
I did.
Woohoo! Yep. Did you? How long ago?
We celebrated 50 years up there. They invited us up. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Even though I'm 53 years married now. Yeah.
Oh, when did you go back up for the anniversary?
When I was 50 years married.
On the same year, so the 50th anniversary. So it was 3 years ago.
Yeah. It
and,
was fabulous.
And you're putting up with Joe for 53 years now.
Oh, Jesus, don't talk to me, Neil. Oh, my God. I met him up in Francis Hall, okay?
Yeah.
Myself and my friend went up there, right?
Yeah.
And we were dancing away anyway. And I said, look, that fellow over there, he's gorgeous. He came over anyway and he danced me. And we danced.
Was this a live band now, obviously, like a show band or something?
No, it was records. Yeah.
All right, okay.
Right, the Hot Boys call it.
We're talking about the early 70s. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
That's right. Every week we used to go up, but that was grand. She danced anyway and he walked me to the bus stop by Langborough. I was getting number 6 bus to Grange.
Right.
And we had a little kiss and that was grand. And he said he'd meet me again, made arrangements. That was grand. Outside the capital, 2 days after, he sent his sisters down that he can't come and meet me. He'd no money. Right? That was grand.
Where were you supposed to go? Were you going to a film in the capital, is it?
A film, yeah. And he sent his sisters down to write covers, wasn't he?
You could have gone for a walk or something.
No, 3 days after.
You could have had money. You could have paid for the pictures.
I could have paid, but why should I? I hadn't much either that time.
Right,
okay. I was working in Guy's in Patrick Street at the time.
So
he invited me out anyway after 3 days. That was grand. He walked me back up to the bus stop again. So he said, by the way, Marie, he said, I really fancied your friend, not you. I said, thanks very much.
You're joking me. What the?
I can't give my friend's name now because she's still my friend. And that was all right. We met up again.
Why didn't you give him his marching orders then when he said something like that?
I told him. I said, look, off you go. So if you're not interested, that's fine.
Wasting my time.
So I got another message and guys, he wanted to meet me. And it went from there then. So we carried on and we had done a line up to 5 years. We were 5 years together before we got married. Got married anyway up in the Metropole reception. That was grand. You know, at that time we took away for our honeymoon.
You were banished from your own wedding, remember? On the same day? Yeah.
I got out of my wedding dress, got into my lovely suit, my honeymoon suit. I swear to God, Neil, when I looked at it, the Robin Hood hat.
The Robin Hood hat?
I thought it was beautiful at the time.
70s fashion.
It was the 70s. So off we went anyway up to Dublin. It was grand. Next thing he found out, Kirkcapes were playing down at Plough Lodge. Remember Kirkcapes?
I do remember them, yeah. They were in the lodge and Celtic were out in the box. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. He said, Marie, I have to go down for the match. Nearly 3 days I got honeymoon. 3 days.
How long were you supposed to be away for on the honeymoon?
2 weeks.
And was it 2 weeks in Dublin?
No, 2 weeks touring around because he'd his own old banger of the car.
And after 3 days, he realised there's a Hibs match down the lodge.
Yeah.
And you agreed to go back.
I agreed. What a fool. What a fool I was. Thinking back now, I was a fool. And then brought me back to my mum and dad's house in Grange. My mum and dad thought there was something else happening.
He gave you back to your parents.
Back down to Flow Lodge he went, Neil. Yep. And I got no more holidays after that. That was it. No honeymoon, no nothing. 53 years on, and here I am, and I'm still here.
And did you have a house set up and everything to live in? Or?
I was living with my mum and dad for a while, and then we got a flat up in Dillon's Cross. And then the first child came along, and then he was missing for that.
Was he at another match?
He had another match up in Dublin and the child was born while he was out in Dublin.
But he wasn't playing for Hibs, no. Really. He was just a supporter.
No, a supporter, yeah. So that's what I tell you, the match was more important than me honeymoon and me child.
But like, yeah. After the Hibs match, and you came back after 3 days of your honeymoon, why didn't you go back on off on the honeymoon trip again the next day?
I didn't bother. I was so quiet and stupid. Yeah.
You wouldn't be that way now, I'd say.
Oh, God, no, I'd kill him. No, kill him. Yep. So that was all right. We got a flat then in Dillon's Cross. I had my first child. He was missing for that. And then we moved to Talker then. And I'm here now, 51 years in Talker.
He had a rocky start, Joe, didn't he? Firstly, fancying your friend. And secondly, dumping you back to your mum and dad and aborting the honeymoon.
Yeah.
He had a rocky start.
And I still stayed with him, and we had 7 children. 7. Single and double, Neil. Single and double.
You would hate to think that a son or a daughter would tolerate that kind of carry-on now.
Oh, my God, I'd kill them if they'd done that to me daughters, their sons. Their
Teach
wife.
Your children yeah, well. So, any grandchildren?
15, Neil. Not one, 15.
I'd worry about that because I'd worry that I wouldn't know all their names. What's the secret in remembering all their names?
I remember them all, yes.
All 15, you know every single name?
Oh, every one of them, yes.
You could introduce me to somebody, right? You could introduce me to somebody and 5 minutes later, 5 seconds later, I've forgotten their name.
Oh, God, I have a good old memory, Neil. I have.
What's
a
the
great
secret?
Memory. Oh, did not love anyway. Oh, God. And every time I meet my friend, I just think, gosh, she should have been with him. No,
you should tell her. Would you tell her? Oh, you might upset her, though.
No, I told her.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I did. I said it to her. She just laughed at me. I don't know, did she fancy him or not either? I don't know. I told her. Oh, yes, I did. And he carried on, and I carried on, and ended up then with 7 children. Yeah.
7 children.
And he's still the love of me life. Yeah.
Well, you have difficulty remembering my 7 children's name. Never mind the 15 grandchildren. Wait till the grandchildren come along. The great grandchildren, I mean. What?
The great grandchildren. No, I don't want no more grandchildren. Yeah. No, I've no great grandchildren yet. No. He was unbelievable, Neil. He was.
He got better, though. He improved with age.
Oh, he improved big time with age. And I remember when he served his time, he was a stone cutter, Neil. And when he served his time, his mother said to me, oh, you're taking him now when he had the full wage. Yeah.
Oh, so they were tough times.
They were. But Neil, they were happy.
I know. Great story.
I lived in Grange, Neil, and it was all just farms, and it was just fabulous.
Oh, listen, the big city's got so much bigger. I know what you're talking about. I mean, if you look at, I don't know if you know the Mahon area at all, down around Mahon and Ballinor and areas like that. They were all farms and open fields where the shopping centre is now.
Yeah.
That was just farm after farm after farm. The whole lot of it.
And Mum and Dad, you send us up to the farm, we get the milk, and you could take the cream off of the milk. It was never pasteurized or anything.
Can I just ask, because I could be here, it was totally different. Can I just, one final question, because I'm going to run out of time. So after Dublin, where were you supposed to go on the honeymoon? Was it like Salt Hill or something?
Come back down, around Ireland, yeah.
And were there hotels booked or bed and breakfasts or what?
No, we just went into bed and breakfast, whatever it be there. I don't know.
So he owes you an 11-day holiday for 53 years. He owes you 11 days.
Yeah. Oh, he owed a lot more, Neil, a lot more. And you wouldn't mind, Neil. He drove his own car to the church and he was cribbing. I said, why did you drive to the church? I don't care if you stood me up. Yeah. He drove to the church himself. Yeah.
How did you get to the church?
I had a car. Yes. It wasn't a fancy one, it was just an ordinary black car that we hired.
So he drove himself to the church and parked up his own car, is it? And off he goes.
He'd an old Ford Cortina, and he drove himself, parked up, and headed off to Dublin for the honeymoon. Yeah. honeymoon that I only got 3 days.
He's a gas man, yeah. Your Joe. I'd love to talk to him sometime.
No, he's funny. No, all right. Yeah. Okay. And we're still together, all in our own now, just the two of us. Yeah.
Ah, lovely story. Great story. Marie, stay listening. I just want to get one fast one here if I can. Last shout outs for Monday Munchies. Lighthouse Central in Ballincollig are listening. Cronin's and Buckley. Cronin and Buckley Steel Factory on board. Brilliant Homes Painting and Plasters in Mallow. Cope Transport in Montanati. And the Stores Department at Capwell Bus Station in Cork. I have no more time for the Monday Munchies. So we just pick a winner for Monday Munchies and we're good to go. The last word to Sean. Sean, good morning.
All right, Neil. I was just listening there to your one there about the husband.
Yeah, there are kind of some similarities, actually. Some, in the sense that your other half didn't like you.
Oh, God, no. No, she thought it was complete gobshite.
You kind of, you might get that impression when you meet your first, but it's not an accurate impression. You're just actually lovely, chatty, confident guy from Liverpool.
Yeah. Well, right. How it was is right. I was, this is 23 years ago, I was up in Mayo and I was recovering after a serious accident over in England, and so I was back home with my mum and whatever, and I was back home about a month and I was feeling well enough, you know, and I was dying for a drink, so I went out one night and I was there with the cousins and whatever, and he said, oh, come on, like, you know, we're going off to the Acklehead, you know, we'll go back to the island and we'll go to the nightclub. It's like, yeah, good old, you know, geared myself up
the
mentally.
Acklehead, that would be on the bridge just on going over onto the island, right?
No, that's Alice's. There on the left as you go just before the bridge, that's right. Alice's.
Okay.
Oh, you know Acklehead?
I do know it. I'm actually going back up in a few weeks' time. Maybe I'm confusing the hotels, but I know the one you're talking about anyway, yeah.
Yeah. No, the Acklehead is you're going all the way back through Acklehead, all the way back towards Kimbay. Or as they now call it, Keem, because they can't pronounce the local words right.
Oh, I know it. I do know it. Right across the road, there's a Kraken bar and restaurant that does the Amethyst. Do you ever, well, maybe...
Yeah, the Amethyst, yeah. And the VI, and yeah.
Okay, anyway, so we got the geography sorted. But anyway, out you go to the nightclub on Ackle.
No, didn't even get to the nightclub. We left the bar. There's a S-Force, you know, a 4x4 outside, you know, so, and Eugene, the cousin, says, he goes, we're not going to the nightclub now, we're going to a house party. And I says, whose house party? And he names the house party. And I went, oh, Jesus Christ. You know, didn't want to go there. The house had a terrible reputation, you know, for trouble being there and drugs being there and all sorts of shenanigans going on, right? You know, so sitting in the back of the Jeep, you know, and I just pulls my baseball cap down and I'm thinking, right, can I walk from there up to the Acklehead? And I'm thinking this, right, here's this girl with a Cork accent. How's it going, boy?
Do that Cork accent again, because it's appalling. Do it again.
She says I sound like a Jamaican. How's it going, boy?
What? Do it again. It sounds dreadful.
I know, it's terrible, isn't it? How's it going, boy?
It's atrocious.
You can take the piss out of me all you want for that.
Do you think that's great? Do you think that's great, mate?
It's better than my Cork accent.
All right, go on anyway. Up she comes. Yeah.
So she turns around, you know, and there's this lovely dark-haired girl sitting in the front passenger seat, and she says her lies to me, and I just, like, glares at her and pulls things to me, goes in, right, you know, and she tries talking to me in the house and I'm listening to the accent and I'm thinking, you know what, your accent is really sexy, you know, and she's thinking to me, to herself, you're a miserable sod, you are, you know, so I got talking to her, you know, and the more drinks started flowing, you know, the more relaxed I got.
Why would you come across as miserable? Because you're just grumpy about not going to the club, is it?
Yeah, you know. Now, I personally think I'm one of the easiest going, friendliest guys around, you know, but if I see me ask about something, it's quite visible on my face.
Okay, so we have a Liverpudlian who found the Cork accent sexy, although he's grumpy. And did she come round?
She did. Believe it or not, right? It's 500-mile round trip from Cork to Ackle, right? A weekend, kept her, because she'd been up at 6 a.m, did a day's work up to Ackle, met her friends up there, and then came out that night, you know. And I kept her up half the night, just chatting to her, and she's going, will you have it, bugger off, and leave me to go to bed.
So why would she come up for? Why would she come up week after week, every weekend?
Well, because I met her the next night and I was in a better mood. And she, because it was like, here, you know, this lovely looking girl, lovely Cork accent, you know. All I kept doing is thinking about her. Certainly, I was through the week, you know, we'd exchanged numbers and then she came up, and then she came up after about a, I'd say about a month, you know, she was coming up every other weekend or every weekend, you know, and eventually threw me in the car, kidnapped me, brought me down to Cork, and we've been together ever since. You know, but it's just, you know, it was, wasn't planned. You know, I just thought she was good looking and had a lovely accent. You know, I wasn't planning anything long term or anything. And here I am 23 years later, still with her, love the bones of her. You know, don't know what life would be without her.
Great story. Rocky start, great ending. Appreciate that, Sean. I'm not going to have any more time to take any calls this morning, I'm afraid, but I want to do a couple of winners for different competitions. We got Luso Cork doing our Monday Munchies and an overnight at the Metropole with dinner in the Met Bar. You'll have a wonderful, wonderful food there. Overnight, of course, in a gorgeous room for you and whomever you choose to take with you, and a delicious breakfast the next morning in the Riverview restaurant overlooking the Lee. Now, we'll have this all week long, but for now, and I know that Marie was back in the Metropole 3 years ago for her 50th wedding anniversary. She's 53 years married now and was married in the Metropole herself and Joe. But it's just such a cracking story. It's a great story, Marie. And I want to send you back there again. Now, thank you to everybody else who texted and came on air. But I think Marie really deserves it. It was a great story. An aborted honeymoon, back for a Hibs game. And the rest is history and everything else that went with it. So, sorted for an overnight, Marie. Enjoy it. Bring whomever you choose with you. I'm assuming that it will be Joe, and probably rightly so, because 53 years together and still going strong. 15 grandchildren later. And also, we'll do it again tomorrow. We have another overnight with dinner and breakfast in the Met. Also, our Monday Munchies winner for today, I believe, is the Brothers of Charity. Anya Fleming messaged in on behalf of the staff and all those working in the Brothers of Charity. So good luck to you all. Have a great day. There's cake on the way for you guys, courtesy of ourselves and Luso. I'll see you tomorrow.
When Cork talks, Cork people blow my mind.
They talk to Neil Prendeville
on Red FM.